Hi, welcome to the Hillbrook Center for Teaching Excellence podcast. I'm Bill Selleck, our Director of Technology. On this episode...
Right, so pick one thing and, like, tell me a story from you. Like, are you good at telling stories? Are you good at, like, making video? Are you good at taking pictures? Are you good at making a presentation? Are you good at writing? Find your content piece. Find your strength and what's your interest. And, like, tell us a good story through that.
So that was Brian Revisa, one of our science teachers, talking about assessing science projects. He's going to talk with us in this episode about place-based learning and how our 14-acre campus is his classroom. That and the creation of an arthropod music video on this episode. So trying to put your finger on what makes our science team at Hillbrook so extraordinary is tricky, right? You see cool things happening when you're rocking around campus, and those cool things sometimes include an iPad. So before we jump in and hear from Brian, take a quick look at place-based education. If you don't know what that is, do a quick Wikipedia search. I'll read one sentence for you. Place-based education often involves hands-on learning, project-based learning, and is always related to something in the real world. So an example the Wikipedia article gives us, students embarking upon a unit about the Vietnam War might interview veterans of that war, collect their stories for a radio spot, newspaper article, or educational brochure. So how might a science classroom look different when you have 14 acres, right? That's what Brian gets into. Here's Brian talking about sit spots.
So sit spots are basically all students are given their own spot on campus that is intended for them to just have kind of a special place to go, but also it's used as a science and inquiry spot, a place to actually run like science experiments, field studies.
How big are these spots?
What's that?
Like the size of a basketball hoop, or like a
no? So the spot. So the spot's a good question. The spot is about 6 meters in diameter. Well, let's see. It's about like four, but maybe about 4 meters in diameter. But they can actually pick how big of an area they want it to be. Like essentially, what happens is I'll map out the campus, and I want them to all to be kind of far apart enough from each other that they can't see each other. That's really important. And that they're all just going to have sort of their own experience where they're not, you know, listening to each other or watching each other talking, engaging in conversation. So essentially, like, I'll map out the campus, like, put flags, like an orange flag on a branch or here or there, like, all around campus ahead of time, right? Mm-hmm. And then the kids are told... that they're going to get this experience. They're going to have their own spot. So we learn how to walk out to the spots completely silently and just listening. And then I tell them that, you know, they're in a single file line. And I tell them that I'm going to point to the spot where the flag is and that they're going to go to that spot. And they can pick, like, any area kind of within visible range of that orange flag that feels comfortable to them. So there's some choice. And the reason why I, you know, have to choose the spot is just because otherwise I'm going to get kids that are going to be next to each other. And the idea is that we want them to immerse themselves and be able to have an experience of just away, apart from each other. First day when we do it, the kids will get out and they'll just sit with nothing. They'll go with absolutely nothing. They won't have a journal. They won't have any technology. They're just told to go. And when they're doing that... you know, we just find out what observations, what the experience was like. They come back silently to class, and there's two, three, four, some sort of a choice of questions that are generally something around, you know, can you draw something that stood out to you? Can you write about an experience that you have? Was there anything that you noticed that you've never noticed before on campus? Was there a particular sound that stood out to you? What was the feeling like? Did you feel isolated? Did you feel like this was an enjoyable time? So, you know, we just give them a reflection. And then we actually sit down together at the end of the reflection time, and everybody will share out. And inevitably what we get is, you know, there's usually a lot of thankfulness for having quiet time. What happens over time is that we'll slowly kind of add in, like, okay, you're gonna bring your journal out today, and you're gonna we're gonna maybe focus on sound, you know, so like a sound map where you'll close your eyes now and you're just gonna listen. And then you can draw a sound map, so you can draw what a sound looks like, maybe check marks or maybe whatever, bubbly, whatever, if you hear a sound, you know, what to look at, where is it in relation to you, behind you, whatever. Other days we'll do things like make an observation within an arm's reach or like a sphere of your body, like a radius, you know, around your body, like that big. Or then we'll do one where it's like look far away from you and see stuff. And they'll want to observe things. And some days we'll bring out colored pencils, whatever. We'll do some actual writing observations, drawing. There's all kinds of things that we can do in terms of what we're looking for.
So one of my favorite things that Brian has done so far is that this isn't a high-tech thing, right? You end up hearing where the story is going to end. And you're like, wow, look, such amazing projects. And look at how they use iPads in the classroom. And that's not really the point. The point is to look at what resources you have around you and really take advantage of what you have. And a big part of that is the environment. And I think that a lot of times we get caught up in the tools and the tech and the apps. And that's not really the point. And Brian does such a great job. In a moment, you're going to hear him as he brings technology into this lesson. And it suddenly becomes powerful and meaningful. It's not just iPads for the sake of iPads.
Sometimes what helps is just kind of a kid will make an observation and that student will bring it back to class and we'll talk about it. And I'll ask them questions about kind of what they saw or experienced. And then they'll kind of be like, wait, I don't necessarily remember. And then it'll force them to kind of go back and relook at it, nice. Which I find is an important tool to just kind of get them going back. Slowly after we kind of do that, then I'll introduce, you know, okay, if you want to bring your iPad, bring your iPad. And we've had some cool outcomes with that actually the kids, I don't know, if I, you know, the kids have actually taught me what could be done with it. So
there's two big things going on here, and I want to pause for just a moment to really dive into those. So the first one is that students are now teaching Brian. We've shifted away from the teacher is, you know, the sage on the stage is kind of the classic thing you hear, where if you set up a project like this just right, students are able to take their passions, their knowledge, their expertise, or just be able to see a direction they want to go. And it's just a matter of the teacher being willing to go into that. And then the second big thing is that one of the most powerful things about technology is it helps us better individualize the experience for our students. And that is a big deal here at Hillbrook. I think that's a big deal at a lot of schools. So here's the moment where Brian's able to pivot and shift and adapt and modify his lesson for the students that are actually in front of him. And this is that moment where if you're not a teacher, you're like, well, can't you just teach the same lesson every year? Like, why do you have to prep so much every year? And this is the beauty, the art, the mastery of teaching when you look at the students that are in front of you. And the experiences can be different every year because the students in front of you are different every year. So check out what Brian does.
So one big thing is mapping. Like mapping the campus has actually come about. So an important thing about I don't know, sort of the sit spots is it's one of those things that when you run it, it can sort of, it'll go many different directions depending on what the class is and where your conversations go and what the observations are. You know, last year it went the direction of we had some really cool observations of some ants, some other arthropods. So students wanted to map the campus, and they wanted to map it themselves so that we could talk about orientation of, like, where did this experience happen? Where did this observation happen, right? So we ended up mapping our spot.
So they used Z-Maps, Z-E-E Maps. There's a link in the show notes for it. Although these days I would use a collaborative Google Map.
We'll use the iPads to take pictures and we'll do a time lapse. So they actually have to keep their same view. Like they'll mark a tree with a string or they'll mark like a part on the ground. And they'll always set themselves up so that they're looking in the same exact direction. with the iPad, and then, you know, they snap the photo, and we'll do this like every week or every other week as often as we can, so that through the year they'll see the seasons change, they'll see leaves fall off, or they'll notice that leaves don't fall off. But it's yet another tool to just to help observation, right? Like, you might not question why some oaks are deciduous and lose their leaves and some aren't. You might not notice that unless, like, in your picture, you're like, how come my tree lost leaves and yours didn't?
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
Or you're looking at the ground and you're seeing, like, grass come up, and you might not realize how many areas of the campus the ground doesn't have campus or doesn't have grass, and some areas it does have grass. And how come by the creek grass doesn't really grow, right?
Yeah.
And how come, wow, there's, like, piles of leaves always down there and over here, you know, whatever, like, yeah, all these kinds of things pop up. So that's one thing we do pretty regularly, and they'll have to organize those in a folder and make a nice time lapse, so stitch them together throughout the year, and we'll, you know.
So what Brian's talking about is what David Perkins has called about-itis. This is where you learn about science, but you don't actually do any science. So in the show notes, I'll link to a blog post about it. You can also read David Perkins' book, Making Learning Whole. What this gets to, and where Brian's going to start to wrap this up for us about sit spots, is that mobile necessitates personal, right? As an educator, it compels you to individualize.
Yeah, another thing that's happened, you know, is just having all the photography that happens. So slowly, we'll say, okay, use your iPad, go take photos of everything that you find. Like, we're documenting a field study of arthropods, so get a picture of what your spot looks like. When you see arthropods, what does the ground look like in that area? What are the conditions? You know, we're looking at abiotic and biotic factors. And we can share those. They can come back and they can...
I'm going to cut Brian off right there. We end up going down this tangent around collaboration and documenting work, which is incredible. But we get back to this point about making connections to home and making connections to the community. So I wanted to read a quote from you from the book Place-Based Education, Connecting Classrooms and Community. And the foreword of the book is written by Lori Lane Zucker. So here is the foreword. A significant transformation of education might begin with the effort to learn how events and processes close to home relate to regional, national, and global forces and events, leading to a new understanding of ecological stewardship and community.
Honestly, one of the main goals of doing the sit spot is that the kids get more of an intimate connection to their home place. You know, I mean, we're walking around the campus all the time, and kids feel... I mean, you know, you would think that you really know your place, but we get responses from kids all the time during the reflections that, you know, they say, literally, I've been here for eight years, and I didn't even know that, you know, there was this many trees back here, or that this area was all kind of rocky, or this, like, amazing branch with all this moss all over it. You know, they have these really thoughtful insights that they share, and I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, haven't taken the time to sit and just be without a whole lot of thought just allows you to be present in a way to notice an area that you wouldn't otherwise.
And that's the power of putting student choice and engagement at the center of the classroom. Not the content, not the teacher, but where students are at the center of learning.
Yeah, I mean, you can keep a concept, like, such a broad concept like that seems like so, right, just like, there's not depth to it. But, like, man, if you get it on that level, like, that's deep, right?
Yeah.
What can you do with that? Like, how can you teach people about that? How can you really give that perspective? Like, how can you make people feel that? You know, that's what I'm interested in teaching kids.
So how do we, as educators, move to a more student-centered classroom? How do we still cover the content and give students choice to keep them engaged? One of the things we're doing at Hillbrook School is improv during our faculty meetings. And this is one of those things where in the moment feels like it might not be a great use of our time. Like, really, it's an all-faculty meeting. Why are we spending, you know, half a day the week before school playing improv games? But I think what you end up getting is this cultural shift towards yes and. This is one of the basic tenets of improvisation. And a lot of people think you just kind of go, yes, and let me add my own thing. But really what it is the yes is acknowledging what has happened and accepting that, right? Yes, here's what we covered. That's awesome. And let me add my own thing. And this is one thing where a teacher can do this, but to actually give the power to the students to be able to say, yes, I hear the content and I want to do my own thing. And then for a teacher to be able to improvise the lesson and the experience and say, all right, let's go down that rabbit hole. We have one more story for you where Brian talks about a music video that the students ended up writing and recording. The song is called Creatures. The video is called Creatures. So here's Brian introducing how that came about.
It was a culmination of, you know, a month, month and a half, maybe 2 months of sitting in spots, doing other field studies, doing some field trips, some campus ecology / creek ecology. We have a creek on campus, but we also went and visited a creek. We're doing a trout study, and so we're learning about macroinvertebrates in creeks and creek health and how do you assess creek health. And in the process of doing all this, the kids were taking, you know, all kinds of video and photos. And they were taking videos and photos not only of the study subjects, but of each other doing science.
Oh, cool.
So instead of me having to be the one that's documenting it all, mm-hmm. I basically told them to take liberties. Like when you see someone looking at something, you know, when people do documentaries, like it's kind of fun to watch them in the process of doing science.
Right.
And so so what happened with this particular project is I had a song that I had written for an organization that I work with as a conservation organization. And it was for a fundraiser, and it was a compilation of a lot of the work we've done out in the field. And I wrote a song kind of in the spirit of loving nature and small critters. And so a couple of the students had found that, seen it online, and started singing it in class, which was like just, no pun intended, but just music to my ears. they were like singing this. It just brought me to laughter. So I said, would you guys want to make a music video like that one? And they're like, let's do it. Like they were on board.
Before Brian jumps into actually explaining the music video, it's worth taking a moment to actually talk about what the students were doing. They weren't just talking about science. They were really practicing science. And when you do this authentically, you tee yourself up for being able just to create amazing projects. So have a listen to how they ended up doing this.
And then, there was a project during the time that they had to actually like get photos and videos of organisms and kind of analyze them up closely and see how they move. So there was a lot of those already. So, we ended up dumping just loads of pictures and videos into Google, a common Google folder that we had for the class. And then we had everybody kind of sort them out, and then we just put them together and put them into a music video that was, can almost think of it as some sort of a public service announcement to look out for all those smaller critters that we often overlook.
So you can check out that music video at hillbrookcte.org along with other show notes. Brian ends this episode with a really cool story about a mayfly and a revelation the student had. But as you listen for it, there's so many different layers to this story. It's beautiful. I would challenge you to also think about how this applies to educators and what it's like when we finally let go of some of that control.
There's this one mayfly that they get a bubble in their exoskeleton that floats them up to the surface, because that's what helps them. Once they get up to the surface, they're going to crack this thing open and fly away as an adult. So they want to get up to next to the surface area. They want to break that the surface area of the water, right? Mm-hmm. So there's some of them that go up to the surface, and then they actually swim against it because they want to resist it. They feel like they need to go back down because that's mm-hmm. where they've been, right? And you watch them, then they float back up, and they fight it so hard. But there's some that don't fight it, and the ones that don't fight it go up, and they just emerge. The ones that do fight it don't have enough energy when it comes time and they make it to the surface. They can't break the surface area, so they drown. And I had a kid in class say, wow, that's so metaphorical of life. When you fight against the natural flow of things, I was like, whoa. So for me, man, that's like some of the most fun stuff. When you get into that level, when when doing science can teach you life lessons, that's the goal of teaching.
So join us this season as we continue to talk about mobile learning and mobile inquiry. Our website is hillbrookcte.org. We'll go find links to download the podcast, play it directly from the website. Lots and lots of resources and examples and photos of what we're talking about in this episode. So join us next week as we continue talking about mobile learning and mobile inquiry with another science teacher, Laura Blum. Thanks for listening.